Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-ZTRIM. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. We have a news bulletin in. NBC decided today that they will now refer to whatever it is going on in Iraq as a civil war. Well, I would think that that would be justified if you have what appears to be a duly constituted government, even though it was placed there by more or less by an occupying force, and then you have factions trying to overthrow that government. Yeah, I would say it's a civil war. I wonder how George Bush is going to react to this, and his thuggish administration, probably with little envelopes of white powder to NBC. Hey, happy post-Thanksgiving, Truth Seekers. Seems like just forever since we have gathered in the evening like this, doesn't it? I have a bad feeling about this Christmas season. It's just going to be a little bit difficult to get jolly. I don't know. We'll get into it tonight. I don't mean to, you know, be a downer already. My God, the program is only 2 minutes old, and we're already talking like this. But I've been paying attention to specifically what is going on in the Middle East, mostly Iraq, but also the occupied territories in this Palestinian territories. And it is just incredibly, unbelievably otherworldly what's going on. I don't know how we can focus. I guess we always do, though, don't we? Able to focus on a holiday season. Those of us who are not directly involved with a family member in a combat zone or a family member having been killed in one of these fights. Have you stopped eating yet? In our house, Thanksgiving isn't over until the last leftover is eaten and or tossed. And this year, dinner officially lasted about 60 hours. We're still giving Molly a little bit of dressing, and she's starting to look at us like, I'm only 2 years old, but I will run away from home. So the feeding has ended, and the shopping giftmas frenzy has begun. I scoured the papers this weekend to see if anyone was killed Saturday or Sunday over a toy. I'm sure it happened somewhere, or had a finger bitten off, or lost an eye in a scuffle over electric skillets Walmart. Got to celebrate the miraculous birth of the little baby by buying the little Jewish baby by buying cheap plastic crap made in China. It's enough to turn someone like me, who is just an absolute full-blown romantic, into a dyed-in-the-wool cynic. Remember the curse that was put on Bush by the Malaysian excuse me, equivalent of a griot or witch doctor. He put a Haitian curse on Bush. And then all sorts of bad things happen. More bad stuff. One of those police officers in Hawaii who was involved in the motorcycle crashes while escorting Bush's motorcade when he came back from Vietnam. It sounds so odd to say that, when Bush came back from Vietnam. One of those police officers died. He was 30. And according to the Associated Press, Bush sent his condolences to the family of that officer. In a separate incident, a fourth motorcycle officer crashed and injured his wrist when attempting a U-turn on loose gravel while escorting Bush last Monday night. He was treated and released. Also, during Bush's 16-hour stopover in Hawaii, a White House staff member was hospitalized after being mugged by three assailants near Waikiki Beach. Got to watch out for those Malaysian/Haitian curses.
And apparently, the Argentinian government would like the Bush girls to leave because of all the uproar over the mugging, the missing purse. Actually, it wasn't a mugging, per se. And they're not going anywhere because their 25th birthday is coming up. So you know what that means. Hook 'em horns! Party! Party!
Yeah. This is a strange story. This is from ABC News. First of all, I didn't know this statistic until I read it this afternoon. About 3 million Americans live with epilepsy. And what is astonishing, a surprising number of these people go to jail because of that. Why? Because around the country, police officers and bystanders who see someone having a seizure sometimes mistake it for disorderly criminal behavior. Can you believe that? But that's what happened to a man in Pontiac, Michigan, a guy named Daniel Belanger. He's a 48-year-old single man. On most days, according to the ABC News, he lives a normal life. But about once a week, he loses total control of his body and mind to an epileptic seizure. And he had such a seizure while walking through his suburban neighborhood recently when an onlooker in a neighbor's house saw Belanger having the seizure, which includes rapid, repetitive arm motion. She, the onlooker, misinterpreted his criminal conduct. Specifically, she thought this man was masturbating in public. So she called the police. When the Oakland County Sheriff's Department arrived, Belanger was still undergoing a seizure, acting disoriented, not responding to questions. When officers couldn't get him to answer, they drew their weapons, zapped him with a taser, hit him with a baton, wrestled him to the ground, handcuffed him, put him in a police car, took him to jail. Now, the wild motions and inability to communicate, if you've ever seen someone have an epileptic seizure, that is simply the classic symptom of a grand mal seizure. ABC News reports the officers put Belanger in jail, citing assault of a police officer and resisting arrest. Now, realize this is not as bad as the almost bridegroom who was shot to death in New York over the weekend by the New York cops. But my God. Now, throughout all of this, Belanger was wearing one of those medical alert bracelets identifying him as an epileptic, stating his name and the contact numbers of people who could be reached in case of an emergency. Did the cops take a look? Why, hell no! All this man is guilty of is having a medical condition that resulted in a seizure. Now, here's the terrible part. It's bad enough up to this point. But this man, Belanger, was ultimately found not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, he's not insane, he's simply epileptic, but his lawyer told ABC News there was no other way for Belanger to get the charges to get off than to use insanity. And then he had to spend 20 days locked in a criminal mental facility. Well, he had to before his case came up. Good God Almighty. Belanger said he's still waiting for an apology from the Oakland Sheriff's Office. And what would Mr. Belanger say if he could address them directly? He would say, in a situation like mine, look for a medical bracelet. Pay attention to what you're doing. Know your job. Don't just grab a taser gun. 50,000 bolts in a situation like mine could kill a person. I swear, here in Atlanta, a 92-year-old woman gunned down, shot in her house because she opened fire when cops, plainclothes, out-of-uniform cops try to bust into her house. She shoots and wounds three of them. She's killed. Then the deal in New York, the murder in New York, this. What the hell is going on with the police lately? We've had in DeKalb County, which is one of the five major counties that make up Metro Atlanta, we've had something like 12, 13, 14 people shot dead by police in the last 8 or 9, 10 months. They had a church service the other day with county administrators, county police, and some of the families of the dead. None of these people were involved in violent crimes. Most of them were fleeing or petty crime or fights at a bar. And the cops weighed in and just opened fire. And this is not white on black. Most of the government officials in DeKalb County are black to begin with. A huge percentage of the police department is black. And the victims are all black. What the hell is going on? Oh, wait. This is the Christmas Eve. Now, I've got a Christmas story. We'll have several of these as the season progresses. But wait till you hear this one. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Two past the hour. All right, our first, I think this is the first weird story of the season, of the Christmas season. This is from southwestern Colorado. There is a homeowners association there. There is a subdivision in this town. It's Pagosa Springs, Colorado. And the homeowners association has threatened to fine one of the residents, one of the homeowners there, $25 a day until she removes a Christmas wreath from her house that has in the middle of the wreath a peace sign. Yeah, just let it sink in for a second. Christmas wreath, and in the middle of it, she's constructed a holly or a pine branch peace sign. Now, Some of her neighbors say it is an anti-Iraq war protest or a symbol of Satan. Some of the people who live in the subdivision with this woman have complained that they have children serving in Iraq. That's according to Bob Kearns, who's the president of the Loma Linda Homeowners Association in Pagosa Springs. He said some of the other residents believe the wreath was a symbol of Satan. Anyway, he was interviewed by the Associated Press on Sunday, and he said, quote, somebody could put up signs that say drop bombs on Iraq. If you let one go up, you have to let them all go up, end quote. What a dumb jerk, huh? A peace sign.
Well, if you put that up, you might have to put up a sign that says, I love killing people and babies especially and burning them with white phosphorus.
How can people be this stupid? Now, the woman, Lisa Jensen, says she wasn't thinking of the war when she hung the wreath. She said, quote, peace is way bigger than not being a war. This is a spiritual thing, end quote. Peace on earth, goodwill. Oh, my God. Now, Lisa Jensen, the one who hung the wreath, is a past president of this homeowners association. And she calculates that the fines are going to cost her about $1,000, and she doubts that the Homeowners Association would be able to make her pay, and she said she is not going to take it down until after Christmas. She said, quote, "Now that it has come to this, I feel I can't get bullied. What if they don't like my Santa Claus?" The Homeowners Association, this is a 200-home subdivision. The association sent a letter to her saying that residents were offended by the Christmas wreath with the peace symbol in the middle, and that the homeowners board, quote, "will not allow signs, flags, etc. that can be considered divisive," end quote. So the president of the Homeowners Association, Bob Kearns, ordered the Homeowners Committee to require Jensen to remove the wreath. Members refused after concluding that it was merely a seasonal symbol that didn't really say anything. So Mr. Kearns fired all five of the committee members on the Homeowners Association. Fired them all. I guess their bylaws allow him to do that. I can't comprehend that story. Can you? It peace on earth. Now, when Mr. Kearns, the head of the Homeowners Association, goes to church, and when these people who think the peace sign is a Satan symbol, when they all go to church and they hear their preacher saying, it's a season of peace, heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace. They're not saying sleep in heavenly, Satan. They're not saying, when they say peace on earth, goodwill toward man, when it says that in is it Luke? They're not saying Satan on earth, goodwill toward man. It's peace. And the metaphoric flag metaphor, a symbol for peace, is that symbol that back in the 70s, the right-wing murderers in this country used to call it the footprint of an American chicken. Remember that? Huh? You evil bastards. It's a peace symbol. And to put it inside a Christmas wreath is what other time of year would it be more appropriate? Have you got any Christmas carols? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.
I pray my wish will come true. It's for my child and your child too. He'll see my day of glory.
I've made my
day
for him
when men of good will live in peace again. And peace on earth. Can it be?
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 26 before the hour. Bob Herbert's column in today's Times, I guess, is what made me realize that this is going to be a rough Christmas, and I'm not that self-referential to say it's going to be rough for me. That's not what I mean. It's going to be rough, I would think, for we know it's going to be rough for approximately 3,000-4,000 families here in this country. There are a lot of Christian families in Iraq who've had their family members blown to pieces in the civil war there, in the factional fighting, or by U.S. or coalition forces weaponry. We have tens of thousands of families in this country whose members have been seriously, in some cases permanently, catastrophically maimed because of the psychopaths that run Bush's foreign policy. This is horrifying. This is just horrifying. And this evil bastard still, I'm referring to Bush, still talks about victory. If this is not the hallmark of someone who is mad, I honestly don't know what is. And as Bill Crowley just reported on the Air America Radio Network News, if you happen to hear that, however you're listening to this program, military leaders in Iraq are insisting that Iraq is not being swallowed in a civil war because there's still a functioning government. Well, in the first place, the government is not functioning. But secondly, we had a functioning government here. Abraham Lincoln was reelected during a civil war. So what? The denial is just epidemic. It's infected the military, the top military leaders in active duty in Iraq. What the hell has happened? Are they all on the take? Has Cheney promised them directorships in the Carlyle Group or Halliburton if they sit over there behind all their stars and lie while more and more and more people die? What the hell is going on? This is madness. This is not just people protesting a war now. Here we sit. And this brings me to Bob Herbert's column today. Americans are shopping while Iraq burns. He writes, the competing television news images on the morning after Thanksgiving were of the unspeakable carnage in Sadr City, where more than 200 Iraqi civilians were killed by a series of coordinated car bombs, and the long lines of cars filled with holiday shopping zealots that jammed the highways approaching America's malls that had opened for business at midnight. There's something wrong here, truth seekers. Have we become this adept at delusion? I mean, I know we Americans are probably the most, as a group, the most delusional people on earth. And some of the delusion is actually fun. But dear God. Herbert goes on to say there's something terribly wrong with this juxtaposition of gleeful Americans with fistfuls of dollars storming the department store barricades and the slaughter by the thousands of innocent Iraqi civilians, including old people, children, and babies. The war was started by the United States, but most Americans feel absolutely no sense of personal responsibility for it. And that's the part to me that's staggering. I don't feel any responsibility for this war. Do you? Herbert goes on to say, this indifference is widespread. It enables most Americans to go about their daily lives completely unconcerned about the atrocities resulting from a war waged in their name. Now, I don't go about my day unconcerned about this. I have to carefully and with much discipline keep my mind off of it. Up to about 7 or 8 months ago, I would look at the pictures that circulate around the internet of burned children and armless 10-year-olds and civilians blown to pieces, and I finally reached the tipping point. I said this is not self-referential, and it's not. It's my limit of what I can tolerate, and I don't know what to do about it. I voted to remove these bastards from office as best I could. I've been in demonstrations. I've done the same things you've done. I've done the peace vigils. And it's like the people who are making the decisions to continue the slaughter. What was it? 8 more Americans died today? 8 more soldiers and Marines died today? The people making these decisions are as beyond reach by me and you as Mars. They don't give a goddamn. They couldn't care less. Let the slaughter continue. Herbert writes, while shoppers here are scrambling to put the perfect touch to the holidays with the purchase of a giant flat-screen TV or a PlayStation 3, the news out of Baghdad is of a society in the midst of a meltdown. According to the United Nations, more than 7,000 Iraqi civilians were killed in September and October. 5,000 of those killings occurred in Baghdad. Iraq burns, we shop. Herbert writes, the Americans dying in Iraq are barely mentioned in the press anymore. They warrant maybe one sentence in a long roundup article out of Baghdad or a passing reference no longer than a few seconds in a television news account of the latest political ditherings. He goes on, since the vast majority of Americans do not want anything to do with the military or the war, the burden of fighting has fallen on a small cadre of volunteers who are being sent into the war zone again and again and again. The war has now lasted as long as the American involvement in World War II. But there is no sense of collective sacrifice in this war, no shared burden of responsibility. The soldiers in Iraq are fighting, suffering, and dying in a war in which there are no clear objectives and no end in sight, and of which a majority of Americans do not support. They are dying anonymously and pointlessly, while the rest of us are free to buckle ourselves into the family vehicle and head off to the malls and shop. Jesus, God! I don't know how to overcome that. I was brought up in a generation that I know a lot of fun is made of the baby boomers. You know, we're just I don't know what we are. We've been criticized left and right, up and down, by the generation before us, generations that coming after us. But one thing I think a lot of us understood because of what we experienced in the 50s and in the 60s is a sense of shared responsibility for what happens to this country. And that doesn't exist anymore. It just doesn't. It's not there. I'm not trying to make it sound as though the 70 million of us who are baby boomers are somehow of a higher conscience or consciousness than other people. I'm just saying our generation and maybe others before, you know, I don't know. I'm in my generation. And we had a sense. It was fleeting, but it was there nonetheless. That you can't do this. Brother Dave Gardner said it back in the 50s. You can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. So I don't know. I notice this a lot, and I know you do too. You know, I go about my business. I try to remain just as invisible as you do. There might be half a dozen people on this planet who give a damn whether I live or die. Just, I'm sure it's true in your life. You know, you got your family members. You know, you are as anonymous as I am. And yet I feel some sort of connection that somehow is being prostituted and violated and beaten up on and kicked in the teeth by the Bush crime family. Because, first of all, of this freakish, insane, monstrously immoral war. So I read that this moron Bush is meeting the freak that runs Iraq. Where are they meeting? In Iraq? No. In Jordan. Why is that? Well, come on. They're not even meeting in Iraq, for Christ's sake, because of the risk of both of them being blown into a million pieces. And where's Cheney been? Skulking around the Middle East. What the hell is he doing? Talking here and talking there and trying to cut his deals. And now word comes that the Iraq group, this bunch of warmongers who are working under the authority of the Iraq, what is it, Kathy? That group that's about to present their report. What the hell is it? The Iraq study group. Yeah. Iraq study group. Jesus, God. That they're about to recommend, whenever the report does come out, that the Bush crime family is going to have to deal with Iran and Syria. Can you believe this? And this simpering bastard is still saying, no, I'm not going to do it. No, I don't make mistakes. No, I'm not going to do it. So where's Condoleezza Rice? Where is the Secretary of State? Where is she? Another incompetent freak that works for this administration. It's unbelievable. Watch out with these songs with peace in it, Kathy. You're going to get us accused of being satanic, for God's sake. The words are sticking in my throat. Peace on earth. Hear it every
every Christmas time, with hope and history won't rhyme. So what's it worth, this peace on earth? Peace on earth. Peace on earth.
I think we are welcomed, but it was not a peaceful welcome.
My God. This just caught my eye for another reason than who's involved here. This Senator Brownback of Kansas, Republican of Kansas. This was a Buzz Flash news alert. And what has happened here is, there's a woman named Janet Neff. She has been nominated to be a federal judge in Michigan, and her nomination is being blocked by this religious zealot and right-wing freak, Sam Brownback of Kansas, for no reason other than his own personal homophobia. What happened was 4 years ago, Janet Neff went to a lesbian commitment ceremony for her friend and next-door neighbor of more than 20 years. And because of that, this half-witted Sam Brownback is using his senatorial privilege to block her nomination. Janet Neff explained in October that the commitment ceremony did not purport to be a marriage, had no legal effect whatsoever, and that she did not preside or act in any official capacity. She was there because her friend was making a commitment. But that's not enough for this moronic Sam Brownback, who's using that Senate procedure to place a hold on her nomination. He said the other day, well, what I want to know is, what does it do to her look at the law? Dumb bastard. How do these people get into positions of power? What the hell is wrong with you people in Kansas? Oh, never mind. Now, Brownback is on the verge. He's another one of these right-wing Republican morons who think America still want Republican leadership. If this election just a few weeks ago would have been on Bush, Bush would have been out too. But Brownback is another one of these Republican nutballs who's going to announce his candidacy for the White House. And apparently, as BuzzFlash writes, is trying his hardest to replace Rick Santorum as the Senate's biggest wacko. His next-door neighbor is, not his next-door neighbor, but a woman who's been nominated for a judgeship attended a lesbian commitment ceremony in 2002, and this half-witted, who is he playing to? Are there that many Republicans? I know the answer to the question before I ask it. That many Republicans in the state of Kansas who say, oh, yeah, well, that's a good move, Senator. Yeah, okay. We love your homophobia, you sick old bastard. Yeah, we love that, so we'll vote for you again. And then at the Progressive Daily Beacon online, a man named A. Alexander, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, the title of the blog here is The How and Why of America's Polarization. You know, we all sit around and go, God, I can't even talk to my friends. I've lost friends. Republicans declared war. That's what happened. You know, a lot of people say, how did this happen? And A. Alexander writes, just listen, just a couple of sentences here. Gosh. Professional pundits and pseudo-journalists like Tim Russert and Katie Couric wonder, how did American politics become so polarized? Ooh! The how and why of America's polarization is, after all, as obvious as it was intentional. Most absurd, however, is the way in which the Tim Russerts and the Wolf Blitzers and Katie Couric's of the world tend to blame liberals for America's polarized condition. How America became polarized is simple. More than 30 years ago, the Republican Party set out on a mission to divide the country. They used race-based wedge issues to make inroads in the South. And when that didn't get enough results, then they turned to abortion and rode that for all it was worth. And now it's the gay thing. We know this, though, you and I. We've talked about on this program that the single most divisive or divisive force in this country has been the rise of Republican neoconservatism, the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush and Dick Cheney and these religious nutballs, these religious zealots in this country, the Christians. That has resulted in this horrible, horrible stench in this country of mistrust and division and polarization. And I hate you. Well, I hate you bigger. Well, to hell with you. Well, my hell is a better place for you to go than your hell. You know, just sick. On and on and on and on and on. Now, some of the more tuned-in listeners will say, well, Malloy, hell, you don't make that any better. No, I don't. I don't. I really don't. My justification is I've tried to reach across that divide. And as soon as I try to reach across, I get some moron call my program and say, well, look at the failure in the Scandinavian countries, or accuse me of being a baby killer because I support a woman's right to privacy. Not that scummy woman's right to choose phrase. I hate that phrase. That's not what the Supreme Court ruling was about. It had nothing to do with abortion. It had to do with a woman's right to privacy. But because I support that, you see, as soon as I reach across that divide, you know, well, these right-wingers will you know, just, oh, you like to kill babies. You know, I can't tolerate that kind of crap. Can you? And then there's this. According to Brigadier General, former U.S. Army Brigadier General Janusz Karpinski, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld authorized the torture of detainees at Abu Ghraib prison. This was an interview on Saturday for a Spanish newspaper, Alpai. What is that? The Peace? I don't know. She said she has seen a letter apparently signed by Rumsfeld which allowed civilian contractors to use torture. Civilian contractors. What an evil man this Rumsfeld. What a filthy, filthy human being. Do you know how long it's going to take us to recover from the damage that some of these members of the Bush crime family have done to the United States, overseas, domestically? It's my God. I will not live to see the damage repaired. I won't. If you're in your 40s, you may. Maybe if you're in your 50s. I don't know. We'll be back after the break. We have more to talk about here and your phone calls, all right? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVam Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. We're going to go to your phone calls here in about 30 seconds. I was watching some of CNN's Situation Room today, and Jack Cafferty, who is, I guess he's Wolf Blitzer's curmudgeon, but Cafferty's segments usually are pretty... I love his acerbic wit, not to mention his sarcasm and his disgust and contempt for everything that has to do with the Bush crime family, Jack Cafferty. So he had a question today in light of the revelation that Rumsfeld authorized the torture. What will happen in Washington, D.C.? And, you know, will anyone hear it and do something about it? Or will Washington, D.C. remain tone deaf to this latest atrocity, this latest impeachable or war crime? Jesus, God, think about this. Now, think also about the people, the lance corporals or the privates or the sergeants, whoever it has been, I have not been keeping track, who have been sentenced to prison terms or discharges, usually dishonorable, for being involved in the torture, the mistreatment, the sexual mishandling of prisoners at Abu Ghraib, and wherever they can be ferreted out, these crimes, and yet the man who ordered it, the son of a bitch who ordered it, didn't we determine at Nuremberg that illegal orders are to be disobeyed? And that it works all the way up the chain of command. It is not the grunt who carries out the order that is to be hanged. It is the officer or the civilian who ordered the treatment to begin with. Isn't that what we established at Nuremberg? Is that not what we established at the war crimes trials in Tokyo? And here's Rumsfeld. This miserable, evil vampire who has known all along. I think about the last 3 years, the snotty, condescending press conferences of his whenever this issue would come up. And I think about every single press conference that Gonzalez has had, and before him, Ashcroft. The snotty, condescending attitude whenever the questions were asked, well, do we condone torture? And the documents that they carefully doctored and worked out so that Bush could sign them, executive orders, allegedly exempting U.S. leadership from any kind of responsibility in this. These are war crimes. My God, we have an administration here that has committed war crimes. That were this Nuremberg, Germany, 1946, these people would be on trial for their lives. We've gone through this. We were the ones, along with the Brits and the French and the Soviets, who established what will constitute crimes against humanity and war crimes and who is to be punished after World War II. And here we have the highest civilian and military command in the United States committing war crimes by the definitions laid down by us. This is astonishing. This is why I try not to think about this. Just like Bob Herbert says in his column today, you know, people are dying by the thousands in Iraq and America shops. Jesus, God, how did this happen? And what are we going to do about it? Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld ordered it. And when this was carried by the Reuters news agency 2 days ago on Saturday, a spokesman for the Pentagon declined to comment on General Karpinski's accusations, and the U.S. Army in Iraq could not immediately be reached for comment. Could not be reached for comment. The U.S. Army in Iraq could not be reached for comment. Rumsfeld, according to this report, also authorized that the Army break the Geneva Conventions by not registering all prisoners, according to General Karpinski. She said she raised the case of one unregistered inmate with an aide to former U.S. Commander Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez. She said, quote, "We received a message from the Pentagon from the Defense Secretary ordering us to hold the prisoner without registering him. I know now this has happened on various occasions." That's against the law. Oh, my God. It's against international law. It's against the laws that civilized nations tried to establish while they also tried to encompass the idea of civilized war. If you can figure that one out, God bless you. I can't.
But the rules were established. Rumsfeld, Cheney, Bush, Gonzales, Ashcroft, they all dropped their pants and urinated all over agreements, U.S. Constitution, Geneva Conventions, what was set up at Nuremberg, the definitions of war crimes. This is just unbelievable. It's almost unspeakable. An American government, American military, American intelligence agencies, and private American contractors now, all working in tandem to torture, lie, steal, cheat, murder, kill, bomb, destroy. And the Iraq Study Group, what the hell is this? A foreign policy initiative being conducted outside the realm of Congress? For the first time in U.S. history. Iraq Study Group, what the hell does that mean? Where's the Secretary of State? Never mind. Where's the United States Congress? Where's the openness? Where's policy discussions? It's being conducted by James Baker III? My God! And the American people, how much input do you have into the Iraq Study Group? Yeah, about the same as me. Who does have input? Where is Congress? Where are people if any exist, still have a rational sense regarding this murderous enterprise entered into by these filthy neocon pigs who now, every last one of them, have tried to divorce themselves from what is now hanging around Bush's neck like a stinking dead albatross. Oh, we don't have anything to do with that. No, yeah, we had ideas, but it didn't work out. No, not me. I'm out of here. You know, Richard Pearl and Douglas Feith and Wolfowitz and the rest of these murderous bastards. I don't know, man. Woman, man, whatever. I just can't get my mind around this sometimes. Especially this Iraq Study Group. What is this group? What are they going to do? What kind of nonsense is this? James Baker III, the guy who engineered the theft of the election back in 2000 so that this miserable, mentally crippled freak could take over the White House. James Baker is now... Oh, and don't tell me about the other guy, the co-chairman of this group. He is window dressing. This is James Baker III's deal. This is the Bush crime family at its most obvious. Here they are. Here they are. The consigliere, James Baker III. Oh, this is what we're going to do. Well, now I'll tell you what. Bam. U.S. foreign policy being conducted in this manner. Discussions. You think the Bush crime family, you think Cheney is secretive? These hearings that are being held, this Iraq Study Group, which is a joke, a farce. It's a murderous joke, a bloody farce. And that's how they're doing it. That's how they're conducting U.S. foreign policy now. But you and me, hey, we got to go shopping.
You know, they're obviously killing Americans, but they're killing a lot more Iraqis.
Oh, 21 past the hour. If somebody wants to, I have a favor. I just got an email here from Jan in New York City.
Mike, it's in a little late. Don't know if you've talked about the twins. That would be the Bush twins running naked in the hotel. It's on abcnews.com. I got it through Rachel Maddow's blog. She talked about it on her show. If somebody can send me a link to that, I don't think I could. Thanks, Jan. I don't think I could handle looking for that one.
Link Schmink, hey, just look outside. They'll probably be passing by here any minute. Woo, here we come.
We better do some phone calls before I lose my license here. Susan is calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Just in case anybody's interested, when you come out of a grand mal seizure, it's rather like being just coming out of general anesthesia. You're not sure what planet you're on, let alone being able to do anything somebody's telling you to do.
Yeah, I've been told that. You're epileptic?
Yeah.
Epileptic? Yeah. Well, you would know, yeah.
And from the way, from what you said about not paying any attention to a medic alert tag.
That's insane. What are those things for?
It kind of makes me wonder, are they going to go back to stuffing us in the closet or maybe back even further to the 12th century when they used to burn us at the stake?
Yeah, that's, oh my God. Well,
after
if you have
all,
a, if you
we
have
were
a,
possessed with the devil.
That's right. That's right. Well, if you have a seizure in the wrong place at the wrong time out in public, somebody's going to call the police, and if you're not real lucky, this is insane. Susan, I can't. That's another one of those stories. I just can't believe that in this country, someone who is obviously involved in a seizure, and I say obviously, I have seen grand mal seizures.
Yeah.
I know they're not all the same, but these are to protect and defend. They're not to shoot and taser and lock up. I don't think there's a cop car in any city in America that doesn't say to protect, to defend.
Right.
Jesus, just trigger happy gunsels is what these people are turning into, these cops.
Oh, yeah. And one other thing. The woman that called the police in the first place, she needed to get her mind out of the gutter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. She thought she saw this poor guy was masturbating? Oh, my God. I don't know, Susan.
It's just...
I know. Sometimes I wonder where we all live. Hey, listen, thanks for checking in, all right?
No problem, Mike. You have a nice night.
Okay, you
Bye-bye.
Too. You too. Take care.
My question is, though, even for the sake of argument, had he been masturbating, do we taser people now for masturbation?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question.
I mean, we taser everybody now. Hey, gotcha, Dad. Wait, Mom. Hold on. Come here, son. No, here's a cat. Oh, God, what was that?
This is what happens when you have a society that has come very close, and I don't think we've reached the tipping point yet, although we're very close to it, becoming a totally militarized, lockdown society. Our Constitution has been shredded by these bastards that are in power. The militarization of the U.S., of various U.S. police forces has been just hideous to watch. How often do you hear of someone, there's a report. Someone has barricaded themselves in their house. I'm not talking about the obvious, potentially horrific situation where somebody snatches their stepkids or their kids or their spouse, and they've got guns and knives and dynamite. Just somebody who is out of control, and they've locked themselves in the house. And yes, they may have a gun. And the neighbors call the police, and the police get the SWAT. And the next thing you know, you're watching MSNBC or CNN. All of a sudden, it's all you see. And you see what looks like an invading force from some other star system. I mean, these people, these cops, these SWAT cops are more heavily armed and shielded and protected and weaponized than soldiers in a combat zone. It's astonishing with all their guns pointed hither and yon. You know, a tree moves, kill the tree! Every day, it's insane. And what happens when you have a situation like that? You have a situation like what happened in New York, what happened in Atlanta, what happens all over the place where people get just blown to pieces because they made the wrong move. Unarmed
or like the 92-year-old woman here in Atlanta. And it's a law in Georgia now. If you feel threatened, you can shoot first and ask questions later, and you're protected by the law. That's a state law in Georgia now. If you have a weapon, and I don't care where you are, if you have a permit to carry, for anybody who's thinking about messing with me, just keep this in mind. That's a law in Georgia. If someone steps up to you and starts to threaten you and you happen to have a gun, you can shoot them. So this 92-year-old woman does just that, and she's dead. Oh, calm down. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Learn to speak a language. Learn to speak Arabic. Those in the Arabic regional say, gosh, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
Oh, my God. All right. A couple of people sent me the link. It's ABC News. Reported by Joe Goldman and Rhonda Schwartz. Amid a growing barrage of front page headlines, U.S. Embassy officials, quote, strongly suggested, end quote, Bush's twin daughters, Jen and Barbara Bush, cut short their trip to Buenos Aires because of security issues, U.S. diplomatic and security sources tell ABC News. But the girls have stayed on, celebrating their 25th birthday over the weekend and producing even more headlines about their activities. Officials say the media coverage upstaged publicity plans for the new U.S. ambassador who had only recently arrived in the country. And then it goes on and on and on. The stories of the twins' visit took on wild proportions in the Argentinian press. One tabloid headline had the young women running nude in the hallway of their hotel. According to sources, the U.S. Embassy encouraged the two girls to cut their stay short because the added attention was making their security very difficult. And then there's this. Listen, Thursday night, an ABC News producer was able to walk into their hotel unchecked and engage Barbara Bush in conversation while she checked her email on a computer in the lobby. Jenna sat talking with friends on a sofa nearby. No Secret Service agents were anywhere to be seen in the lobby, according to ABC News' Joe Goldman, who is one of the writers of this this report. Blah, 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 blah. Sources tell ABC News the twins plan to stick to the original itinerary and stay in Buenos Aires until Thursday. Kathy, I'm sorry. I thought you were kidding me when you said it was today, earlier when you said it was suggested they get the hell out of the country.
Here they come again. No, I think they should taser them.
Not unless they have an epileptic seizure, right?
Who could tell?
Well, you're right, man. All right, back to your phone calls. Michelle is calling from San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What a pleasure to hear you and Kathy again.
Well, thanks. I appreciate
it. I mean,
that.
I've been listening over the last few weeks since you've been back, and everybody says it. It's like, wow, it's great to have you back.
Well, we do appreciate it. Trust me. I mean, it's nice to know that the program does have people who listen to it.
Well, you're an amazing person. Kathy is amazing. I think everybody that listens to your show loves the work you do, and I won't go on because you hate it.
Yes, so. I do.
Okay, now the Iraqi head fake group, call it what it
is.
That's what it is. And as far as you know, like all this police action, you know, Mike, we have a government that advocates torture. What do you expect?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it just, you know, it rolls downhill, this stuff. That's just blatant. And as far as, like, if we call this a civil war, what's going on in Iraq, we're allowed to leave because everyone agrees we don't want our troops in harm's way caught up in a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
But the Shrub and his sock puppets, you know, they adamantly resist calling it a civil war because civil war means we have to leave. And once we're out of Iraq, there's no way or very little chance of getting back in there and getting all that glorious oil for the Shrub's buddies and all the war profit carrying for Cheney's pals.
Yeah, they have created a situation. They've created a situation here, I think, Michelle, that is probably unique in American history. I can't find anything like this. If you just start from the position that this is the first time we have been involved in a war, and I realize the Gulf of Tonkin resolution is questionable, but this is the first time we've been involved in a war where every single issue that was used as justification for war was a lie. Every single issue. And I defy anyone, from the Bush administration, the crime family, all the way down to my next door neighbor. Tell me why we have American soldiers and Marines dying in Iraq today. For what? And there is no answer. None. This is crazed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Pottery Barn policy. We broke it. Now, you know, we did break it. But
oh, my God, did we break it.
We're exacerbating it by being there. You know, Nir Rosen, he's a reporter in Iraq, and he had a great interview today with Amy Goodman of Democracy mm-hmm. Now.
Right.
You know, you can link to that. You can get the podcast of that segment or whatever and the transcript. And it was fabulous because he calls it exactly what it is. He says it's a civil war. He said the Shia have been, you know, completely disempowered from Saddam's regime.
Sure.
Now they have some power. They're not giving it up. The Sunnis are pissed about it. You know, Mudarik al-Sadr, he's basically in charge, you know. He's mm-hmm. the real kind of secret government. If you get a chance to listen to that, it's so good because it's so good to just hear truth and not mincing words, not a bunch of talking points. It's just, this is how it is. This is how it is on the ground. This is real. These are the politics behind it. And this is why. And his last statement was, Amy Goodman asked him, should we leave Iraq? And he's like, yeah, that's it. That's
sure.
simple. Americans out. We are causing problems. More problems than they already have there. We need to get on the periphery, give them financial support, you know, logistic support, whatever, but we need to get our people out, period.
You know, one of the horrible tangential effects here is that most of the buddies, the Arabic ruling families that are business partners and friends with the Bushes, the Al-Sabah family in,
uh-huh.
in Kuwait, the Saud family in Saudi Arabia. These are Sunnis. And here we are backing a Shia government. And I think in Iraq it's been made very clear that the Sunni and the Shia are kind of like the Protestants and the Catholics were in Northern Ireland, only 1,000,000,000 times worse. So the Iranians are Shia. The Iraqis are Shia. That is the natural alliance. I think the reason that Cheney has been skulking around the Middle East is he's been talking with the Sunni royalty and the leadership of these countries, trying to whip up even more disaster. But this is what they have done. Iraq at least was a secular government under the dictator Saddam, and Saddam could have been overthrown had the United States dropped the sanctions and backed a middle class, just like for the people who want to see Castro overthrown, not that I'm one of them, but for the people who want to see Castro overthrown, it would have been very simple over the past 50 years to just not put sanctions on Cuba. Let a middle class develop. Let a middle class develop. That's where revolution always comes from. It never comes from the poor. It always comes from the middle class. So
well,
what
the poor
we did,
are trying to survive.
Right. What we did was destroy the middle class in Iraq, which guaranteed that Saddam had a lock on power. But the thing that is intriguing to me now is that the ruling families of these oil-rich Arab countries are all Sunni. And here we are backing Shia. And that is about the worst thing that, you know. Now, I don't know how they're performing this dance. It makes me believe that the whole Iraq enterprise, on top of being a lie, has been a fraud, an absolute fraud. That Bush and his cronies, they don't give a tinker's damn what happens to this poor Maliki. They would like to see him shot, I'm sure. Because the Sunnis are the ones that the Bush crime family have been so tight with over the years. It's horrifying. It's just horrifying what they have done, Michelle.
It really is.
All right, let me move on. Listen, thank you. I'm glad you checked in. We'll talk again, all right?
All right, thank you, Mike. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Take care. Will is calling from Michigan. Hey, Will.
Hey, Mike. I noticed you're talking about gift mis-shopping. I did my giftmas shopping this year, not this weekend, but weekend before this past weekend, and I did it at our local peace group holiday sale. We get together and have a local artist come in, and we have some people bring imported stuff from different areas of the world. One of the things I picked up a handful of buttons with the peace symbol on it.
Uh-huh.
Since you mentioned the peace symbol at the top of the hour with that subdivision
right.
Story.
Mm-hmm.
I got a little history on the peace symbol. The first person to use the peace symbol was Bertrand Russell in 1958.
Hmm.
And the symbol actually is has a military origin.
It's semaphore signals it stands for ND, nuclear disarmament, where it comes from.
The diagonal.
Hey, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Well, I got to take a break here. Hold on. We'll come back right after the break. Yeah, and then there's something else I want to I've got to dump into the discussion here. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
God. All right, back to Will, who is calling from Michigan. Go ahead, Will, wrap it up for me.
I just wanted to say that, you know, the diagonal lines in the peace symbol represent the letter N, and the vertical line represents the letter D, which stands for nuclear disarmament. It's only about 48 years old, the peace symbol is.
Mm-hmm.
I guess since it has a military origin, I guess you could claim that it's satanic. Considering all the evil that the military has wrought in the name of capitalism.
And you say that as a veteran. I just want people to know we're talking with a veteran here.
That's right.
All right.
But as far as exit strategy from Iraq is concerned, we had an acronym that we used in the military when I was in there. It's KMAG YO-YO. Kiss my ass, guys. You're on your own. And
wait a minute, I'm not sure we can say that on the air. oh God! Well, if I'm not here tomorrow night, it'll be because they pulled my license. Okay.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah. Whoa, that's easy for you to say. No, that that's a good one. I've heard that one before. It's just that we have to be a little bit careful. I know I don't demonstrate that carefulness the way I should, but yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, Will. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe they had cut you out. All right, is that it? Is that all you got for me, pal?
Yeah.
All right. Listen, thanks a lot. Thanks for the information. Take care. We'll talk again. The Sunday Times of London had this. The you remember last month the bombing of the madrasa, the religious school in Pakistan, in which 82 students were killed. A Pakistani official says that raid was carried out by the United States. The madrasa was in the tribal area of Bajor, wherever the hell that is, was bombed during a visit to Pakistan by the Prince of Wales amid allegations that it was being used to train suicide bombers. A key aide to President Pervez Musharraf said, quote, "We thought it would be less damaging if we said we did it rather than the U.S. But there was a lot of collateral damage, and we've requested the Americans not to do it again," end quote. And then the Times of Sunday Times of London goes on to say the Americans are believed to have attacked after a tip-off that Ayman al-Zawahiri, the deputy leader of al-Qaeda, was present. Local people claim the victims included boys as young as 12, and that the tribal area had been negotiating with the Pakistan government for a peace deal. Now, there's always that charge that the madrasas are training suicide bombers. I don't know if it's true or not. I have no idea. But I do know this. What would happen if an Arab Air Force or any a Muslim, I don't know, if a bomber were to attack a Catholic school or a yeshiva, a Jewish school, and bomb it. And 82 people in the school, students and teachers, were killed. What would happen? What would happen? Go ahead. Somebody answer me. Or if it weren't a Christian school, any sort of Christian school anywhere, but a Catholic school, that Christian schools, Catholic schools, I realize it's a denominational difference there, but Catholic schools and Christian schools really do teach a religious, I don't know about Catholic schools that much anymore. They teach an adherence to Catholicism for sure. Do they teach zealotry? I don't know. Do they still have nuns that'll come along and crack you across your knuckles if you get out of line? Do they still teach you that without redemption through the blood of Jesus Christ, you burn in hell? I have no idea. But supposing it were a yeshiva, a Jewish school, a Catholic school, a Christian school that had been bombed and 82 people killed, what would the reaction be? But this was a madrasa. Now, what goes on in madrasa? I don't know. Do they really train? Are they starting with 12 and 13, 14-year-olds to teach them to go die for Allah by blowing themselves up? I don't know. And if they are, does that justify bombing the school? Jesus God, what is going on? No, it didn't come from Al Jazeera. This came from the Sunday Times, the Times of London, timesonline.co.uk. It's from yesterday. Now, is the Pakistani official lying? Doesn't name him. It says a key aide to President Pervez Musharraf said, quote, "We thought it would be less damaging if we said we did it rather than the U.S., but there was a lot of collateral damage, and we've requested the Americans not to do it again. Don't kill any more of our students, okay? Please? Huh?" I don't know. It's madness. It's utter madness, isn't it? Utter madness? Isn't it utter madness? Something by Father Andrew Greeley. When we come back from Friday, Chicago Sun Time. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. I got an email here from, I always appreciate these, from Nick, who said that the Saudis are Wahhabist. They are Wahhabist Muslims, not Sunnis. Well, actually, Wahhabism is a branch of Sunni Islam, interpreted by Muhammad ibn Abd al-Wahhab. So Nick is right, but Wahhabism is a form of Sunni religion. It's apparently it's a more extreme form, just like there are Christians in this country who are extremists by any definition. They sanction death, tax cuts for the wealthy, murder of all sorts. I realize murder is a legal term, but, you know, when you invade somebody's country and kill the people that live there, I would call that murder, wouldn't you? Yeah. Okay, back to your phone calls. By the way, the number here is 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Got a couple open lines, just thought I'd let you know. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. How did Molly handle Thanksgiving?
She had a little bit too much turkey, and or maybe not enough. But we discovered that the tryptophan makes you take nice naps. So let me get her mother on. Mom.
Well, we had to taser her.
Yeah, I had to taser her. Well, you know that's interesting. That story brought another story to my mind, and it's a good example of what happens when you start reducing your input on public service things like fire department, police, first responders, and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Payton, who grew up here, of course, he was a classmate of mine, childhood friend, and all. His dad was he had epilepsy, and he also drank occasionally. He wasn't a real bad person to drink, but he drank a little bit. One night, Walter's dad had a seizure, and the cops found him on the street. And instead of taking him to the hospital, they went and took him in the drunk tank, and he died.
Oh my God!
And there was a big ado about it. And Walter, at the time, they had these signs out in the front of in two parts of the town. Welcome to Columbia, home of Walter Payton. And one of the agreements with Walter was that they had to take those signs down. And from then on, you never heard Walter say he is from Columbia. But it's, I tell that story because it just shows we've always had this thing where if you worked at Columbia, and you worked in the police department, it was because you couldn't find a job anywhere else. It's because you were just getting out your barrel scraper and just getting the just any job you could find.
Yikes.
And that's the kind of people that were in power, you know, in the police force back in that time. And there was a lot of mistakes made like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason you're seeing all this stuff going on now is simply because this idiot, George Bush, is cutting these services, well, him and all this neocon and Republican buddies, because they don't realize that when you start taking away the protection of the people by cutting back, that it's going to come back on you. And why they don't, I don't know. I guess it's the same thing with Katrina down here, you know. Like Gochet City Police, there's 9 understaffed right now.
Mm-hmm.
And crime has tripled, and yet there's no more money going into filling these vacancies and paying these policemen, and they're working them to death, and they just can't keep up with the crime level. People having to get rid of their stuff because they know it's going to be stolen anyway, so they're selling it to get rid of it, even stuff they wanted to keep. And this is the kind of thing we're going to see more and more of in this country if we don't get serious. And this BS around here, like one woman at the bank today told me when we were talking about Iraq, she said, well, God will work it out. You know, and hey, God's been a lot busy lately because he hadn't been able to get around to it. But
yeah.
I'm sick of it.
Yeah, I hear you, Sarge.
All right. Well, I just wanted to pass our story on along, and hope you and Kathy and Molly have a nice Christmas as well. If I don't talk to you before then.
Oh, you will. Thanks, Sarge.
Okay, Mike.
I appreciate it, pal. Nick, who wrote in about the Wahhabis, he had another request. I think it's time. We haven't had a polka for a long time. Let's have a polka again. Who stole the Kishka? Do we have who stole my favorite?
Ah, there it is! All right, everybody, take a break. Let's get up and dance. Come on, especially you people listening in Detroit.
Someone stole the Kishka, someone stole the Kishka, someone stole the Kishka from the butcher shop. Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka?
The Bush twins!
The from the butcher shop. Round and firm and fully packed, it was hanging from the rack. Someone stole the Kishka while I turned my back.
Hey, 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 hey,
who stole the Kishka from the butcher shop?
Ho!
Come on, come on, get up and dance. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Where's my taser? Get up, dance, damn it!
Hey, 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 hey! I want some more lyrics. I want some more. Who's still? Is that it, Madam Producer? I love klezmer. That is klezmer music, isn't it? Hey, 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 hey. All right, Nick. There you go. Man, hope we don't wake up Molly back there. Is Molly? No, Molly's still asleep. All right. Back to your phone calls. Bob is calling from Meriden, Connecticut. Bob, welcome. Is it Meriden?
Yeah, Meriden.
Welcome
Hi,
to the program, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I want to be the guy that says, I'm not happy that you're back on the air, only because it's cutting into my TV time.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, hey, you don't have a three-week break.
Hey, I can watch TV.
You don't have to listen live. Just wait till tomorrow and download it, iPod it, you know.
Yeah, but I'm listening to other stuff or watching other stuff.
That's true.
I like it. I like it live.
Not enough time for all the things. You know, I feel the same way. But anyway, here you are.
Here I am. Actually, there is something I wanted to talk to you about, and I don't know if you caught this or not. It was something on Huffington Post I caught a couple days ago. Was this video of soldiers on the back of a truck teasing kids.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. I played the video. Somebody sent me the link. I played the video here while we were on the air and suggested people check it out. That was hideous. That was just hideous.
Well, I got to tell you, Mike, it got to the point where I was like, after seeing that, I mean, I've seen so much. It's like, you know, so many times you want to say you support the troops, but isn't there a time where, like, you just say that the troops or the people should be, the soldiers should be, like, doing something to make sure that the other soldiers, the bad apples, as they call them, don't do this stuff?
Yeah.
After a while, I mean, you see, first we had, you know.
Hey, hold on a second. Let me do a break here, Bob, and we'll come back right after the break. I got to do this break. You're making a good point. I want to hear some more. Stay right where you are.
Peace train sounds loud, glide on the peace train. Come on, peace train.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, we were talking with Bob in Meriden, Connecticut. All right, where were we, Bob?
Well, basically, I have a real problem with, after seeing that video last week.
Oh, yeah, the people, the U.S. soldiers dangling.
Well, I guess they're soldiers. I'm not sure if they were soldiers.
Well, they were in uniform, and they were on the back of a military truck. You know, maybe they were private contractors, although the report said, it was U.S. soldiers, but that was a uniformed arm that was dangling that, that bottle of water.
And I don't want to be that guy, like, you know, back in the 70s, because, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was a baby at the time. But, I mean, at the time, it was like, you know, hippies and everything like that were calling soldiers baby burners and
right.
stuff like that and spitting on them. I don't want to be that guy. But on the same token, it's like you get to a point, you see so much of between the Abu Ghraib, the raping of the child and the family and everything else that, you know, these other guys are getting. You know, they're in court for.
Yeah, it's shocking. It's shocking. But when it comes from the top down, when it comes from the Secretary of Defense, when it comes from the Vice President, that there are no rules, there are no treaties to honor, there are no constitutional protections for anybody, anywhere, anytime, if we say there's not, then, I mean, it's so obvious. When you have a breakdown of law and order, it's not just in civilian life that chaos ensues. It's also in military life. When folks, the so-called grunts, when the men, for the most part, and women, to a lesser degree, are actually handling the weapons up close and personal, and they know that.
But isn't there somebody there that has, like, you know, who could think clearly? And
I don't
say,
know.
Hey, don't
I,
do that.
I,
you know, stop.
I know you would think, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I never served, and you know, I probably never will. But I mean, I would just think that somebody there would just say, "Hey, you don't do that," and you just stop. And I don't know. It just drives me up the wall. And like I said, the last video clip that I caught, you know, that you were talking about, I mean, that was just, it was almost like a breaking point for me. I was like, enough to, I don't want to say don't support the troops, but I'm sick of hearing just a few bad apples. I mean, there should be somebody
I know
that would just say, hey, don't do that anymore. Stop.
I hear you. Bob, thanks, man.
driving me up the wall.
Let me move on. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. Take care. We'll talk again. Yeah, you know, the point he's making, I every time one of these instances occur, what was it a few months ago? There was a general stand down where everybody in uniform in the United States military, and I think this was globally, had to stop whatever they were doing. At least in theory, that's how this works. I don't know how it works in application. To have explained to them, and I forget what the issue was. It was about their conduct as soldiers, Marines, Air Force, whatever branch of military they were in. And like Bob, my question is, why do you have to sit down with an American soldier or Marine and say, okay, look, you don't rape 16-year-old girls and then murder their family or murder the girl, burn her, but you just don't do that, guys. You know, we want you to go over there and kill people and break things up, but they have to be people who are probably holding a weapon and maybe trying to kill you or trying to kill each other or trying to kill the people we don't want killed. But, you know, not a young girl. That's... Since when do we have to explain this? Since when do we have to explain that when you burst into someone's home and you open fire on civilians, that's not an honorable thing to do? And since when do we have to explain that you don't ride in the back of a truck with being chased by children who are desperate for everything? Parents, love, affection, food, water, a toilet that works, electricity, heat, cooling, shoes, school, a hospital, a doctor. And you don't ride in the back of the truck and dangle a bottle of water and make them run and run and run. Why is that? Why does that have to be explained? And if you're a real ass, if you're a real rat bastard, you take a video of it and show it to your friends. Hey, look at this. Look what I did with this little, what's the derogatory term we're using? This little Haji. Look what I did, this little bastard. Look at him run. Look at him run. Hey, run, you little Haji bastard. Run, 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 run. Look at this. Isn't this funny? Huh? Hey, man, what do you think? Is this funny?
We take lives when we have to protect the people. That's how I look at it.
That is the sign. That's the ramblings of a homicidal killer, a maniac. Let someone walk down the street of your city and say, "Well, God told me to walk into that apartment complex over there and kill 30 people." What would happen to that person? Yeah, right. We take lives when God tells me to. You know, Bush. From Matthew in Sioux City, Iowa, writes, Mike, Keith Olbermann reported tonight on his countdown that Bush wants to raise $500 million for his presidential library. Interesting part of the story is, where's the money coming from? One of the contributors for the project is coming from foreign Arab nations like the Saudis. Didn't the Saudis have something to do with 9/11? In short, Olbermann says, $500 million being raised by Bush and his supporters simply to rewrite their versions of reality of Bush's failed presidency. Yeah, of course, he would get it from the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the other repressive anti-woman, anti-science, anti-common sense, God regimes that flourish in the Middle East like mushrooms down here in South Georgia in the middle of a cow pasture after a rainstorm. Randy and Lucia in San Francisco, right, regarding the our caller, I forget his name, who was talking about the troops returning from Vietnam who were spat upon. Randy and Lucia, right, Mike, I think the comment about the anti-war demonstrators spitting on insulting returning troops is one of those urban myths. Check out Tom Hartman's comments about that common perception. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to bring it all up in the context of that phone call, but... yeah, I know that's been totally debunked. There were demonstrators who did shout insults at soldiers after they came back, but the spitting on and the baby killer and stuff like that, I think was more of a less of an urban myth and more of a Republican ploy to further divide the country, even back in the 70s, early 70s. Back to your phone calls. Ray is calling from Baton Rouge. Ray, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Ray, how's everything in Katrinaville?
It's doing okay. Things are getting back a little bit to normal, very slowly. By the way, that was Tailhook 91 Symposium you were talking about.
That, in what?
Like it was
what?
Aviation Symposium in 91. The reason Pardon?
Well, that was when the women who attended were raped and molested.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right.
Did I bring that up? I don't remember.
You brought that up in the last two. You didn't mention the name. You were trying to remember when the men stood down, or when the whole army stood down for something.
Oh, that was to be educated on sexual
conduct.
I'm talking about something that. Yeah, I remember that. No, this is something that happened since the beginning of the Iraq War.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not familiar with that one.
But the tailhook, you're right. There was a general, whatever they call that, a stand down, I guess, so that people it could be explained to people. But I think wasn't that just in the Navy? Wasn't that just a naval stand down?
That was a DOD symposium.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know there's been something since the start of the Iraq War, but thanks for the clarification.
That's not the main reason I called. You were talking about Christianity and Catholicism.
Right.
Being a Roman Catholic for 50 some odd years, I went through seminary 3 years, and we never even looked at the Book of Revelation. I mean, even in the seminary, that was kind of, a gray area. We just didn't deal with it. The fundies in the church, I think now the church is becoming polarized because of the Bushites and the
right.
It's just permeating everything.
Right.
And, but, back when in the seminary days, back in the early 60s, we were, teaching, learning the teachings of Christ and all this thing about violence and war was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
we didn't discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of over the years it's kind of fucked.
But that was in Catholic seminary, right?
Yeah.
Well, a Christian.
But, we were not even considered Christian by some of the non-Catholics.
Right.
But that doesn't bother me because Gandhi said the only people on earth who don't see Christ and his teachings as non-violent are Christian.
Yeah. Right. I like your Christ. I don't think
I just
your
don't
Christians.
Like his Christians. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I've sent that one to you a few times. I think.
Yes, you have.
But anyway, just wanted to pass that on.
The point I was trying to make though was about the bombing of the madrasas.
Yeah.
And think about if a yeshiva or a Catholic school or
don't forget we bombed Nagasaki was a Catholic church we were aiming at.
Well, that's true. That's true. There were a lot of Roman Catholics that were practicing. Yeah. And wound up and plus American POWs.
Yeah, of course, Nagasaki was the third choice, I think, for that day.
I think so, too.
It's just that that was the only clear sight they could do.
Yeah, so let's go wipe out 87,000 people over here.
Sure.
Crazy. Well, Ray, always good to hear from you. Thanks.
Okay, Mike.
Thanks for checking in. That's I now that Ray mentions it, I grew up in a neighborhood that was mostly Catholic, Eastern European Catholic.
a few Eastern European Jews, and a few Protestants, not very many, if you want a religious breakdown. And I don't know when I first started hearing about this horrible Book of Revelation. It certainly wasn't from the Catholic kids. Catholic kids did, Ray's right. Now that I think about it, they never talked about the rapture or seven-headed whores rising up out of the sea and fiery swords and the four horsemen of the apocalypse, if that's in Revelation 2. I'm not sure where that comes from. But all this horrifying stuff, that... the sad part is, it's sad to me, because my grandmother was just almost a saint to me, but I think I first heard about that, Kathy, from my grandmother, about the Book of Revelation. If my grandmother were alive today, she and I probably wouldn't get along at all, because she was definitely a fundamentalist Christian. She also told me when I was a kid, little kid, that the Catholics worship graven images, and therefore it was a false religion. I can remember that. But I still loved her, right? We used to shuck peas in the afternoon, in the summer afternoon. She used to can stuff, and I would sit there with her and push the peas out of the pods and snap the beans and chop up the tomatoes. And what was so odd about it was, like I've said before, my grandparents were immigrants from Italy. So they so completely gave up the Catholicism and switched over to this radical form of Protestantism, to the extent that my grandmother could say that. Well, the Catholics believe in, they pray to graven images. Ooh! Mark is calling from New York, who happens to be our webmaster. Hey, Mark.
Hey there. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good. You were talking before about Vietnam, and it brought something up for me, and I wanted to, it's not very long, but I'm going to read it. It's very short.
Okay.
My father was kind of a philosopher and wrote, my dear departed father, wrote a lot. And he wrote something in 1971 about Vietnam that I thought was very appropriate considering what you were talking about. And
okay.
It is, we do live in a world that's now push-button war, where we don't see the stuff that goes on the ground, which is why people were so upset in the 70s and did the things they did and were angry with the soldiers the way they were. Mm-hmm. And it's very short, but it's called A Little Lower Than the Angels.
Okay.
Our training chant was kill, 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 as we prepared to show the world what democracy was. Set the example, burn down the villages and kill everyone. We trained well and turned our humanism into animalism. We wiped them out, women, children, everything. We shot children for kicks, ears for beers. Rape became SOP. The major slid his knife into her, I won't say the word, and then slit her up the middle. Afterwards, he skinned the woman. We cut off heads and put them on stakes in the middle of the field. After raping the teenage girl, the soldiers threw her atop a pile of bodies, and five of them turned their semi-automatics on her and blew her apart. We never counted prisoners coming aboard our planes. It became sport to bind them and throw them from the plane. The game was to see who could throw them the farthest. One nation under God.
Oh, my God.
Well, it hasn't changed all that much. We just don't hear about it.
Whew.
But that was 1971. So, for those who think that, oh, well, no, now it's now it's clean and we're really good. Well, I don't think so. I think we're probably not far from this.
Yeah.
And that's what I think all of us have to remember, not in our name means something. Because this kind of stuff that we don't hear about happens in our name.
Now, your dad wrote that as an observer, as a writer.
He was a writer. He was not an observer, but he read news accounts.
I see.
In the Navy, but way earlier on.
Right.
He read news accounts and he read, firsthand testimony, and he talked to people. And I mean, this was the stuff that was coming out in 1971 that horrified people so much that they turned against the war. But when you put it all in a microcosm, man, it definitely puts the brakes on.
It does. Mark, thanks.
Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
All right, man. Take care.
Mighty eagles, let the eagles soar.
Oh, no. No. You know, we're going to lose half our audience here.
Before.
That'd be about nine people.
From the Rocky Coast to Golden Shore.
From the Iraqi coast.
Let the mighty eagle soar. Soar with healing in her wings. As the land...
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the massive crew that helped put this program together tonight in Phoenix. One guy did it! Ian Huff engineered the program, associate produced, answered your calls. Thanks, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Thanks to Mark Marshall at markmarshall.com, our webmaster, and the militant mods at mikemalloy.com who run the comments board there. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program, and as we've been saying, and we're going to stop saying this, podcasting and downloads of The Malloy Show, now available at NovaMRadio.com. Back to your phone calls with a few minutes left here. Daryl is calling from Atlanta. Homeboy, hey, Daryl.
Hey, man, what's up?
You are.
Man, it's been a long time.
Is
boy.
This my man, Daryl?
Man, you know it's me.
Is this
Daryl from Dunwoody?
Daryl from good God in heaven! I haven't heard from you in 5 years.
Man, I've been following your monkey butt since you were in Atlanta. You went to Chicago, and you've been all over the place. You owe me dinner. I told you.
I sure do. This is Daryl, ladies and gentlemen. This is Daryl calling from Atlanta. Well, I hope you're going to start calling in because people need to hear what you have to say. I'm serious.
Well, I hear you, my man. I've been listening to you, but man, you my boy. But listen,
I always am, always will be.
Always will be. When you down and out, or when you up and coming, I'm gonna always be there. Always, brother.
Yes,
always.
Yes, you will,
and
Daryl.
To you and your daughter, you know, I mean, to your wife and daughter, I hope they're doing well.
Thanks, Daryl.
Yeah, but let me tell you this real quick, and I'm gonna be out. But
all right,
let me tell you
right,
something.
All right.
I got a burr in my butt.
You do?
This heifer, Condoleezza. I'm sorry. I know I'm a black man, and she's a black woman, and she's the good doctor. But
right, right.
What is her mouth? What is her purpose in life now?
I don't know.
I mean, like you said, they got this consigliere running around here resolving anything. Do we even have a State Department?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. James Baker apparently just gets called in to assign the presidency, gets called in to decide what to do about a war. In the meantime, the voters and the Secretary of State, I don't know what our function is anymore.
And you know how you see how she disappears? I mean, one minute you see her talking about everything is going great in Iraq, and next minute, I'm sorry, she must be looking at a play in New York called Spam-A-Lot, the same place she was watching when people were floating right side up in New Orleans.
Oh, man, you're cold tonight, Daryl. You're cold.
Need I not digress? I'll let it go, but I just want to let you know I'm glad I got you. And
I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm just saying you're cold. She's out probably looking at one of those monoblanic, how do you say that, Kathy? What is the name of those shoes? Ferragamo.
Oh, that's right. Ferragamo shoes, too, huh?
I thought it was Manolo. How do you say it, Kathy? Manolo Blahnik. See, I don't know anything. Oh, I can barely say Adidas.
Man, I wear a pair of Adads, not Adidas. Adads. They knockoffs. So
all right,
don't ask me.
Daryl, I hope you call it again because I want people who listen to this program to get to know the way you present things and what you have to say. So I hope you're going to call in again. Don't be disappearing on 5 years again now. All right.
All right, brother.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All right, Daryl. Thanks a lot. Take care. If I had time, I would explain Daryl, but I'll just let the audience hear Daryl. He and I go way back, Kathy, way back. I think Daryl precedes even you, my love. Daryl goes back to the WSB days, I think.
It's okay. I'll just have him tasered.
I know. Mike is calling from Seattle. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. Long time no talk to you. At least I followed you, you know, from Air America, at least. But anyway.
Well, you haven't disappeared for 5 years. So,
no, I haven't. Right. And it's really good to hear you back on the air. One of the early people to sign that petition. But I'm glad to hear you back. Anyway, just real quick, I just wanted to say that this incident in New York just only leads me to believe that we're only becoming a police state that much faster, and that
50 shots. Is it 50 or was it 43? I don't know. 50 shots to somebody who was obviously out partying. You know, and just like the deal here in Atlanta, it had to do with reefer or somebody said something about a gun and the cops go nuts. There was no reason to kill. And this man was a father of two little kids. Did you see the pictures in the New York Times today? Oh, my God.
What a shame. And I think I'm a father as well. And I think about myself if I, you know, was shot down by a cop while my son was younger. He's a lot older right now, but you know, what kind of life where would he be today? You know, and that's very disturbing. And I just think that if we don't do something with this new Democratic Congress to try to control these people who are just out of control with power, that we're gonna be in some serious trouble as a nation.
I have something that I haven't had for the past 6 years, and that is some hope that the Democrats are going to do that. The hope, you know, can be trashed. It depends on what these Democrats, if they have learned their lesson about corruption, if they have learned their lesson about how power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But if they have, if this new class of leadership has learned the lessons, then I think the American people will keep them in office, because we've had a 12-year experiment here with Republicans, and if anything has come out of that 12 years, it is the clear proof that these bastards can't govern. All they can do is destroy. I got to leave it there, Mike. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you checking in.
Bye.
Thanks for participating tonight, folks, however you did that. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.